C2SP. Number 8A.
We started yesterday with the second part, and we establish again in consciousness what that second part wants to achieve. Namely, it has the tone of mind and truth, meaning that through the mind of Christ we can uncover what is true and what is untrue in a situation. Therefore, that tone of mind and truth goes right through the second part, and we will see that only with that standpoint of mind and truth can we really distinguish between what is a phenomena of what are phenomena of spiritualism and what are phenomena of Christian Science. Because the phenomena itself, they don't give an indication if they are real or if they are true. We always have to go back to the source of the various phenomena, to the noumenon, so to say, of the phenomena, and see, is that spiritualism or is it Christian Science? We have therefore to do with a lot of uncovering that goes right through that second part with bringing error out from hiding and showing it what it is so that it cannot disguise itself anymore. We started out in looking at this whole second part from the point of view of mind and spirit yesterday, and could see at the point of mind really that only those healings are really healings of the divine mind, which can be traced back to mind, capital M, that they are only true healing, whereas spiritualism or any other mental beliefs are working in the mental realm, and we have to know that every belief works in the mental realm. In the mental realm, every belief has an effect, can produce certain phenomena, and so that we do not have to say, well, belief have no power. In their realm, they have power. Naturally, in the divine realm, in the spiritual realm, they are powerless. So we always have to first ask ourselves in which level of consciousness we are dealing with a subject. Is it in the mental level or is it in the spiritual level? This has been seen quite clearly in the second big subject of spirit, where the question was, what has force, what has strength? And to show that both spirit has strength, but also that mysticism has a force and can move matter. And that should not be so mysterious, because science can explain that. It explains, again, that in the mental realm, mortal mind has the ability, the force, the strength to move matter, just as it has the strength to move our hand or our arm. It is a mental state that gives the command, move the arm. Now, in the same way, spiritualism shows that mortal mentality can move matter. And we had all those examples of Blanchet and so on, which show that this is not really a big mystery. So science explains what? It explains that in the realm of spirit, spirit gives us strength for doing good. That spirit gives us strength to endure in what we are doing. Well, but also in the realm of mortal mind, which is the realm of spiritualism, there too we can see that mortal belief can move matter and can convulse its substratum matter. Why can it do it? Because matter is not something self-existent. It is the subjective state of mortal mind. Mortal mind has the belief of matter, and the stronger that belief is, the more that belief is being objectified as matter and is no more just the subjective state of mortal mind. So mortal mind can produce, she says, table tipping as certainly as table setting, and believes that this wonder emanates from spirits and electricity, but naturally this is just a belief. Namely, this belief rests on the common conviction, it's a common conviction, that mind and matter cooperate. That's spiritualism. And we know how much spiritualistic we are. We always think that mind and matter cooperate, both visibly and invisibly. Hence, that we believe that matter is intelligent. So here we have a clear description of those two levels, the spiritual level and the mental level. Right through the second part constantly goes this distinction between the spiritual level and the mental level. That's why we can uncover really the nature of any phenomenon by tracing it back. Is it a phenomenon of the mental level, the humanly mental level, or is it a phenomenon of the spiritual level? And not to mix it. The same we can see in the next big subject of soul. In soul, we have a very simple explanation again about immortality. The epitome here is in science, that's one level. In science, man's immortality is the logical consequence of the immortality of God. So that's one level, the level of Christian science. Then I usually compare it with the level of spiritualism. Whereas in spiritualism, the immortality of man is a mere assertion. And so we can see the central point is immortality as an idea of soul. We always believe in the immortality of soul. Since Socrates, the world believes that soul is immortal and cannot die. So the question of immortality comes up again and again. And both Christian science and spiritualism try to show and to prove that immortality is a fact. Now, what is that immortality? If we can trace it back to Christian science, then that immortality is a fact, a scientific fact. But if we have to trace back immortality to a spiritualistic belief, then we must say, then that is a belief and therefore belongs to the level of human hypothesis and human assertion. She says it's just an assertion and not a fact. This is showing we have the same phenomenon, yet behind it can be two very different and opposing things. Mrs. It explains that in the text, step by step. I read on page 81, line 1, there is not so much evidence to prove intercommunication between the so-called dead and the living, therefore to prove immortality, because if the dead can communicate with the living, then the spiritualistic belief says, therefore, these so-called dead are not dead, they are immortal, they live on, and give us a proof of immortality. And so she says, there is not so much evidence to prove intercommunication between the so-called dead and the living as there is to show the sick that matter suffers and has sensation. This is very interesting that she suddenly says that matter suffers and has sensation, while in the whole textbook she always says that matter has no sensation, that it is actually mortal mind that has sensation and suffers. And here she says that matter suffers and has sensation. And this naturally must be cleared up in our mind, because we know that this is a belief of spiritualism, because in spiritualism mortal mind and matter cooperate and therefore become, so to say, one. And therefore this is a spiritualistic belief that matter suffers and has sensation. But this is something, as she says, that has more evidence. So that evidence here that matter suffers and has sensation is not the statement of Christian Science. It is a statement of spiritualism, and we must not really confound them, because we know that only mortal mind can suffer, that matter is sensationless by itself. Only when we believe that there is mind in matter, then matter has sensations and pain. So she says this is much easier to prove to spiritualists than the intercommunication between those that have passed on and those that have left behind. Meaning in this way, they are both the same beliefs, only that one belief is much stronger, or is much more evident to us than the other. We are not interested in spiritism, and we don't come out of spiritism where we are constantly faced with that evidence of immortality of the mortal, of the immortality of the spirits, and prove immortality. We are much more acquainted with the ordinary phenomena of spiritualism, that we think that matter, which is dead as a dodo, has pain, has intelligence, can suffer, and we believe that. Instead of seeing that we can reduce that and bring it back to the point where we say, no, that's a spiritualistic belief. Science will explain that it is mortal mind that suffers and gives sensation to matter. So we go on there. Yet this latter evidence is destroyed by mind science. So here you can see that sentence, that matter suffers and has sensation, is now called that evidence can be destroyed by mind science. Therefore it's an evidence in the realm of spiritualism and not a fact in being, and can be destroyed by mind science, because the divine mind never cooperates with matter, and divine mind is never in matter, and therefore divine mind cannot give to matter sensation and pain. So it can be destroyed by mind science. I like to point out this sentence here, because I found in dealing with students that they were overlooking really this statement, and took it as natural and as normal that matter suffers and has sensation, as if it would be a statement of Christian Science. But it isn't a statement of Christian Science, because it is destroyed by Christian Science, by the science of mind. So I hope I have made that clear, that the moment we really feel that matter has sensation, that we are spiritualists, that a spiritualistic argument and a spiritualistic belief, and we believe it. So we believe much more in that than in the intercommunication of the departed with the mortals here, but it is the same phenomenon. I always have difficulty. The singular is phenomenon, huh? Yeah. If spiritualists therefore understood the science of being, if spiritualism would understand Christian Science, their belief in mediumship would vanish. So they would see through that belief and would see that they are believing in a belief. At the very best, this is interesting, at the very best, and on its own theories. So we are not talking about the theory of Christian Science or the principles of Christian Science, but spiritualism can only prove that certain individuals have a continued existence after death and maintain their affiliation with mortal flesh. So she says, at the very best, and only in certain cases, that can be shown through spiritualistic seances, through communication with the departed spirits, that certain individuals maintain their affiliation with the flesh. Because not everybody goes to a spiritualist and says, look here, I lost my mother, I lost my father, I lost my child, please put me into a connection with them. I would like to talk with them and ask them how they are and how they feel and so on. So he says only in certain cases this is brought up, namely through spiritualistic mediums. But this fact affords no certainty of everlasting life. And she says the very circumstance that through a medium we can have communication with the departed is no proof that the individual has eternal life. That is not a certainty of everlasting life. It just can be, namely, an assertion. That's all. So that's why she goes on and says, a man's assertion that he is immortal no more proves him to be so. So now she takes also the assertion, says, well, if we assert that we are immortal, that does not prove yet that we are. It's just an assertion. So if we say, well, man is immortal, and leave it at that, then we can say, well, this is just an assertion, that's your belief, that's no proof. So we have to be very clear again that even stating a truth is not yet a scientific truth. Stating a truth which is actually true, that man is immortal, if that is not understood and is just a belief or an assertion, then that is no proof of immortality. So see, man's assertion that he is immortal no more proves him to be so. Then the opposite assertion that he is mortal would prove immortality a lie. Can you see that an assertion, even if from a higher standpoint, is a true assertion, it is not a proof. The proof must be somewhere else than in just stating. And this is terrific. We can take any statement that we make in Christian Science and say, well, these are the statements that I read in the textbook. They are statements that are true, but statements are not yet the proof that that statement is true. That's why we make that enormous difference between a truth and a scientific truth. And say, not every truth is a scientific truth. Only when a truth is really put back to its origin, or put back to its principle, or put back into the whole system, and sees that it is a fact within the whole, is a proof of it, the correctness of its statement. So that's all those many statements that Christian Science constantly make, have so little effect, because they are not only statements. They are statements of truth, but they have apparently not much effect. If we think that always, every day, perhaps a million Christian Scientists are reading the textbook, are stating what they know about Christian Science and make those statements and read the scientific statement of being and so on, they are not always scientific truths. They are just truths as assertions, and an assertion has no Christ, so it doesn't operate. So let's see again, you see, that, say, in a slightly different connotation, we can say, well, 2 and 2 are 4. And I can say, this is only a statement. This is only a statement of a truth. It is an assertion of a truth, but it is not a scientific truth. It becomes a scientific truth when we know it as integrated in the whole calculus of arithmetic. Then when I see that is a statement that is backed up by the whole system of arithmetic, then I can say this is a scientific truth. The parrot can also say 2 and 2 is 4. When he says it, it is a truth, but not a scientific truth. You can't say what he says is not right. And this is, I think, a big point that we have to get clear in our mind, that we are not just always thinking that if we repeat the statements in the textbook, that that is Christian Science. It isn't. It is stating, it's reading. It isn't a Christ operation. The Christ operation is only then when we see why it is true. Only that, why it is true. And in order to see why it is true, we have to put that single statement back into the whole system, into the whole structure. Therefore, such an assertion that we are an immortal does not prove that we are an immortal. The assertion that we are a mortal does not prove that we are a mortal. It just doesn't prove anything. So, she says, nor is the case improved when alleged spirits teach immortality. So it's the same thing. If I say I'm immortal, or if a spirit says I'm immortal, that both are of the same level, on the level of assertion, of assumption. Therefore, she gives the answer and says, life, love, truth is the only proof of immortality. The moment she brings the question of immortality back to God, therefore away from man's or spirit's assertions, and puts it back to the synonymous term, and therefore bring it back to the whole, then only we have a proof of immortality. This is then further explained as we go on, and she says, she has to explain that statement. Man in the likeness of God, as revealed in science, cannot help being immortal. Here you have the answer. Instead of having the assertion and the assumption that we say we are immortals, I learned that in Christian Science, man is immortal. She says, now you have to see why he is. Namely, man is what? He is the likeness of God, as revealed in science. And so, because God is immortal, man cannot help to be immortal. So the proof we find now here is that we see, because God is immortal, man is immortal. Not because we make the assertion that we are immortal, are we immortal. It is a terrific point. See, it is really that what I wanted to bring out more and more in that subject of the step from metaphysics to science. That's why I feel this little booklet that is just printed and is on sale for the first week here, that booklet, Metaphysics and Science in Christian Science, is of greatest importance for us today, for the student. I would like you to study that over and over until you see the absolute logic of it and until you see really that standpoint of getting away from metaphysical statements to scientific statements. We could also say, when I say man is immortal, that's a metaphysical statement. It's a true metaphysical statement, but it is not yet a true scientific statement. I have to bring that statement back away from metaphysics into science, just as he shows it here, that man is the reflection of God in science, and that's the proof of his immortality. So then we go out from science, and only when we go out from science, not from metaphysics, can we really see a scientific truth and state scientific truth. This is so important because now for about 100 years, most thinking in Christian Science has been the metaphysical thinking and not scientific thinking. Because up to this point, it was metaphysical thinking because the statements were never being seen within the system, within the structure of the whole textbook. A statement in the textbook on a certain line and page is certainly true, but it is only then a scientific truth when I know at which place value that truth has within the whole, or I mistake it. So, through, she says, though the grass seems to wither and the flower to fade, they reappear. That's what happened since time immemorial, so to say, that an apple tree was always an apple tree and always an apple tree. It never changed its identity. It's not one year an apple tree, the next year a pear tree, and the next year a peach tree, or the next year a rose. It doesn't change its identity. They always reappear. Erase the figure which expressed number, that's now a more abstract symbol. Silence the tone of music, give to the worms the body called man, and yet the producing, governing, divine principle lives on. See, again she brings it back to the principle. Says, don't look at the phenomena, what they are. Look at its noumenon, at its cause. Where does it come from? Does it come from principle, from God? Then it is a scientific fact, else it isn't. And that is true in the case of men as truly as in the case of numbers and of music. Despite the so-called laws of matter which define men as mortal. So we are not looking at the various phenomena, we look at the principle of those phenomena.